All right. Thank you for coming. Last talk for today. Sureka is going to talk about Apache Druid. And yeah, enjoy, have fun. And I think there's some reception later at 8 or something. You're more than welcome to join. And at 7, yeah, at 7 that's the birthday cake. Thank you, 7. There's going to be birthday cake outside for the 20-year celebration of the of Apache, so you're more than welcome to join us there as well. Have fun.
Thank you. All right. Good evening, everyone, and thank you all for coming to this talk on Druid today. Welcome. So first of all, I would like to know how many people have heard of Druid here? A lot. Well, among the audience. And how many of you have actually used it for fun or for work? Oh, nice. Cool. So today I'll be talking about Druid. Druid is a fast analytical database for real-time analytics for interactive slice and dice UIs. So we'll talk about some of the basics of Druid. We'll start off with use cases, some of the core features, and later on we'll dive into details into the format of segments and the query processing engine. Who is he? It's not a trick question. Well, he's Gian Merlino, and he was supposed to give this talk, but he couldn't be here. So I'm here trying to fill in his shoes, which is not super easy. He's one of the original authors of Druid project and one of the most active committers right now. Second, who am I? My name is Sureka Saharan. I am a committer on the Druid project for a little less than a year, and I'm also a software engineer at Imply for over a year. Imply is a company which is built around Druid. It provides products and services and some applications based on Druid. So what I'm going to be talking about today, first we'll talk about some background, how data architectures have evolved over the year and where we are today. Then we'll talk about the problems. There are a lot of big data systems. Why did we create Druid? Third, we'll talk about Druid, what it is, main features, use cases, and all that stuff. And fourth, we'll go a little bit under the hood. This will be the bulk of the talk. We will look at how Druid does what it does. Then briefly, we'll talk about what's coming up in the next release. And last, you can try it yourself. It's an open source project. So let's talk about some background to set some context. So you might have seen this slide before. So the first generation of data architectures is, we call those data warehouses. So that's when we have data in different sources, but in order to make it useful, we need to massage it, transform it, cleanse it, and that's the bulk of the work which was done. We call that ETL, extract, transform, load. And once the data is ready, we put that into these data warehouses. And then on top of those data warehouses, you can do analytics, some queries, reporting, mining. So the problem with this kind of architecture was, first, you always need to do ETL in order to make it useful. And second, you could do some thin queries on top of the data warehouse. So you can do SQL or stored procedures. So those were the limitations kind of that data warehouse era. Then came the data lakes. That's when Hadoop became a thing. So what data lake architecture promised is you can put data structured or unstructured into these data lakes, and it pushed ETL away. So just put all the data in the data lakes, and we can transform it later. this works, and even today, a lot of people in the industry have some kind of data lake solution in their data pipelines, and on that, you can do a little more advanced applications. You can do SQL, machine learning. You can add a time series application, like Hive and Presto. Those are more advanced applications on top of the data lake. So that's great. It works fine. But it works for batch processing. What about stream processing? And your Hadoop jobs don't come back in seconds. It takes a long time for Hadoop jobs to finish. So the third generation of data architecture is what we are calling data rivers. And this is where, in this architecture, that's where Druid fits in very well. You can have your data sources. So it has all the benefits of a data lake architecture. You can still have your structured, semi-structured data. You can dump it into a data lake. Or you can have Kafka streaming or some kind of a streaming architecture. And Druid, a system like Druid, can ingest data from both those sources. And you can still do stream processing on this data or real-time analytics. And you can still archive it to a data lake if that's what you want in your data pipelines. All right, so the problem we are trying to solve with Druid. At a very high level, these are the three main pillars. First is around data exploration. We want a tool which can help us explore our data, slice and dice, drill into our data very fast and without any restrictions. You can make more queries to your data. Second is around data ingestion. So if there are some events happening, as soon as a real-time event happens, we want to ingest it at the moment and do analytics on that. So that's the second problem. Third is around data availability. So we want a system that can withstand failures and it does not crash under heavy load. So the point of Druid is to power interactive UIs. These are some screenshots from the app which we built at Imply on top of Druid. So when I say interactive dashboards, these are kind of dashboards which I'm talking about, where you can filter on multiple dimensions, drill down, and you can users in a human time, users can query the data from these UIs, and that's only possible if the database, which is on the back end, can support that. And Druid is one of those databases. So to summarize, so these are the problems we are solving. We are solving slice and dice for big data. You can, anyone who has seen data, you know, when you have a question, you get an answer that only leads to more questions. And we want to do interactive exploration on that data. And we not only want to create real-time dashboards and reports, but we also want to drill into those when the time comes. And we want our data fresh too. So we not only want to load from streams, but also we want to load from batches as well as streams. So there are a lot of challenges when it comes to big data. First challenge is around scale. When the data is large, we need a lot of servers, and speed is another challenge. Large data, big data is hard to process quickly. And to power those kind of interactive applications, we want a sub-second response time. Complexity is another challenge. And because the data is too much fine-grained to pre-compute, some folks normally apply stream processors on top of streaming data. So you can have a query, and you can keep on computing the answer to that query and put it in a real-time dashboard. So your dashboard is updating in real time, but it's not gonna be interactive. So you might be filtering on a dimension, but later you want to, let's say you want to filter on country, city, and product, and maybe you want to filter on all three of them at the same time. That so then you may have to set up a new pipeline, and that takes time, and it's not scalable. So we want fast results, and we do not want to pre-compute. Fourth is high dimensionality. It ties back into the complexity as well. So there are a lot of systems which might work on a small number of dimensions, but we want a system that would scale, or that would give us the same performance for tens to hundreds of dimensions. Concurrency is another issue. When you have such dashboards, a lot of users would want to use it. A lot of users would use it, and that puts a lot of pressure on the system, and we want to support that. And freshness, too. We want to load from streams, as I said before. So what's the motivation for building such a system? We want sub-second responses to allow a dialogue through our data. We want to fly through the data and get our answers quickly. Rapid iterations on questions. So an example of this is could be, so let's say your sales revenue dropped. You want to find out why did it drop. So you want to see, you may want to filter by country and then filter by city and then by product or the stores in the city. So each answer would lead to more questions until you either find the answer you are looking for or you find some interesting insight. And finally, all this removes barriers to understanding. All right, Druid. So Druid is defined on the Apache website as a high-performance analytics data store for event-driven data. So let's break that a little bit. So high-performance means it's low query latency and high ingest rates. So that's just two sides of the same coin. Analytics means we support counting, ranking, group by, those kind of queries. And data store. This is where it kind of differentiates from some of the other systems like Hive and Presto, which query data from somewhere else, but Druid stores a copy of data in itself. And it's also a little bit different from streams, where you can do analytics on the streaming data, but Druid not just does analytics on streaming data, it stores the stream into itself. And that's how we achieve that fast performance. And it works for event-driven data, so like clickstream analytics or user behavior, those kind of things. What are some of the key features of Druid? So it's column-oriented. We store data in the data is laid out in columns instead of rows, and that has a lot of benefits, like other columnar storage systems. We can do, we'll talk about this later. We can compress columns into their own efficient format based on the type of the column and all that good stuff. It's scalable to hundreds of servers and millions of messages per second. The largest server which we have seen is, around 1,000 servers. Time-based partitioning. So, when Druid was built, it was inspired by time series databases and search systems and data warehouses. So it has some characteristics from all three of those technologies. So primarily, Druid always partitions data by time, and they are stored in these segments. But we can also do a secondary indexing and that helps us to do fast filtering on data. And automatic summarization at ingest time. So that, we call this feature roll-up. I think we'll talk about this again. So that also helps with saving storage space, as well as it helps with ultimately it will help with the query performance. We talk SQL. You can do SQL queries, and they'll work with it's embedded inside SQL. We use the Calcite engine for SQL, so you can talk SQL to Druid. And it was built to do rapid queries on denormalized data, so flat tables. We touched upon use cases, so it's good for use cases if you have clickstream data, user behavior. A lot of people are using it for network flows, application performance metrics, OLAP, and internal BI tools, that kind of stuff. So Druid has been around for a number of years now, and it's used by a lot of companies. We enjoy a lot of production use cases. These are some of the logos from the Powered by page in Druid. You can go to that link, and some of them have written blogs about how they are using Druid. Yahoo and Netflix, they were one of the earliest users of Druid, and they still use it. So where does Druid fit in all this? We also, I guess, touched based on these things, but let's say you have your raw data. You might be putting your data into data lake kind of systems, so Hadoop or Amazon S3, or you may have set up a streaming system like Kafka or Kinesis. Druid has native integration with both of those systems. You can pull data. So Druid is a pull-based model. You can pull data from data lake kind of systems or from a low latency Kafka stream. And on the right side, that's where your application lives. So this is, again, the imply application. It's called Pivot. But you can also use some of the other applications like Superset, Looker. Some people use Grafana for that. Or you can build your own custom UI here. So why this works? Well, over the past years, there have been a lot of hardware advances. Computers are super fast these days. Also, software optimizations. Indexes are great. They help save a lot of work and cost. But you can scan tables, too. It can be done efficiently in Druid, if that's what you need to do. So how does it work? Here's a quote by Linus Torvalds. It says, "Bad programmers worry about the code. Good programmers worry about data structure and their relationships." It's getting a little philosophical, but it's just a segue for us that next we'll be talking about the data structures which we use inside Druid, which power the performance which we get from Druid. So some of the tricks we use to get that performance, so Druid stores data in these time-based partitioned segments. These segments are immutable. That lets us do fast reads and writes. Data is always global time indexed, but we also employ secondary indexes on individual columns for compression and faster filtering. And these segment files, they are memory mappable compressed columns, so that helps us. So the memory mapping helps us get some of the benefits from OS, so like caching and paging, all that we get for free from the operating system. Like a lot of columnar stores, it also supports late tuple materialization that helps save some work and gives better cache efficiency. And Druid's query engine can operate directly on compressed data. So, right now we are actually, the work is already done for support of query vectorization. That's super useful. We can do operations on batches of rows instead of a single row at a time, and roll up. Druid support, so you can do this partial aggregation at ingest time, so that So you kind of get two level of aggregation, one at ingest time and the other one at query time, and that speeds up the queries too. So before we talk about the data structures, we have to know a little bit about Druid's data model. So this is some data from Wikipedia. I hope everyone is familiar with Wikipedia. Wikipedia has a lot of pages, a lot of content, and anyone can go in there and edit those pages. So what this sample data is showing is when an edit event happens on Wikipedia dataset. So one of the things is when that event happened. So there's a timestamp. So time has special meaning in Druid. So we store the timestamp column. Then, which page is getting edited, who is editing, username, some other information about the user, like gender and city. So we call them dimensions in Druid. So dimensions are things that later in your queries you would want to group by or filter on. And then in that event, how many characters were getting added or deleted. And in Druid, we call those metrics. So these are the things you generally aggregate or scan. And they have special meaning when you use rollup. Later, we'll talk about that. So Druid segments. So data is partitioned by time. So in this case, it's partitioned by hour. So we have a segment for first hour, second hour, and third hour. So these segments, they form this is the basic storage unit in Druid. And and these segments, they top off at about a gig of size. And if there is too much data, let's say in one particular hour, you can have multiple segments for that hour. So there's no limit on the number of segment files you can have per time chunk. So that's about segments. All right, so columnar storage. We said that Druid is stores data in a column-oriented way. So for example, here the page column is one of the dimensions, and we can add different compression techniques. So one of the things we do is this dictionary encoding in Druid. So each of the string values are given integer mapping. So the page column so we have the dictionary mapping. So 0 is Justin Bieber, 1 is Kesha. So in the page column, we'll be storing these series of integers. And the reason we do that is it's easier to compress integers. It's just an array of integers, and we can compress that easily. So the compression techniques, we use dictionary, and for long columns, we can optionally do a LZ4 compression. So indexing. We use bit vector mapping for indexing. So bitmap is a very old concept, but it supports modern processors very well. For example, here, so for each individual unique value of a column, we will map it to the row in the table. So for example, let's look at the page column again. So Justin Bieber is present in rows 0, 1, and 2. And we assign it, we can add, assign a value. For example, here, if it's present in a row, we say it's 1. And if it's not present, we say it's 0. So that forms a basis for the inverted indexing, which is used in search systems. So the value for Justin Bieber, the index becomes 111000. And if we have to do a query where we want to find all the rows where Justin Bieber or Kesha occurs, we look at these two bit arrays, we OR them, and we get the results. So this is really useful for doing bit algebra. It's very fast. But still there can be a challenge if we have millions or billions of entries and we want to do millions of these operations. So that's where compression comes. So we also, on top of these bit arrays, we use compression. For Android by default, we use concise, and you can use a roaring compression technique. So tying it all back to a segment, so let's see. So the reason we do all these bitmap indexing and compression is so that we have to read a minimum amount of data and we can get maximum compression. So let's see how it works. So, well, you remember, let me go back. You remember this slide. So that's the logical data model, and let's see how it, so that's how it will look in logically inside a segment. So we have the time column there. The time column is stored into these in milliseconds, so it's a long column. So that becomes our timestamp column. And then next is those dimension columns, that page, username, those things. So this is the page column. So first, it's similar to what we talked in the previous slides, but just to make it more concrete. So again, we have the dictionary integers assigned to each of the string values. So that's our dictionary here. So that our data sections is just 0001122. So that's like Justin, Kesha, and Miley. Those were the values. And these dictionaries, they are stored in a sorted order so that later we can do binary search on them. And then the index section we just looked at. So again, these are these bitmap arrays, and they are stored compressed. We can see that with the help of an example query. Let's say we want to find all the, we want to find, let's say, the average number of characters added to page Kesha in the last hour. So the query path would be, we'll go to the dictionary section and check the value for Kesha. And next, we directly go to the index section and check in which rows does that occur. So from here, we can see that it occurs in row 3 and row number 4. So that we can go to the metric column, which is this added column, look at these values, and find the, like, just do the average and return the result. So in this case, first thing, we didn't even have to look at the data column at all. So that's the first benefit which we got. And the second is we didn't have to scan all the complete column for the characters added. We just read these two values or the block containing these two values. So that's how this becomes fast. And it becomes even better if you want to do this kind of drill down. You want to do filter on more dimensions. So as you keep drilling down into your data, your queries would become faster and faster because of this bitmap indexing. So secondary indexing, so that's again that bitmap indexing which we were talking. So there are a lot of techniques for that. There are, most of them are run length encoding kind of techniques. We use concise, which is a type of run length encoding in Druid. But we have seen that roaring has given better performance, so we might switch to roaring as default. But I don't want to get into roaring here. It's just a slide. I just wanted to say that roaring bitmaps are cool. So check them out. You can check them out at the link below. Okay, compressed columns. So compressed columns are great. So here it's an example of how it works for a long type of a column. On the left side, that's your logical column. So it's decimal format, human readable. So let's say these are the values in your column. And they can be so they are stored in Druid, so they can be converted to hex and then padded out to 64-bit long representation. And so that's how it's stored in Java. After that, we use encodings. So these are a sort of compression. So Druid supports delta encoding and table encoding. This is an example of delta encoding. So let's say for value 1001, we look at the least value in the long column, and then the delta encoding is just a offset from that. So we would represent 1001 as 0, 1002 as 1, and so on. So we look for what's the minimum number of bits that's required to store it. So in this case, it's 4. So we store these values in a 4-bit encoded representation. And then later, they can be LZ4 compressed into blocks and then stored on disk. So these blocks are, they top at 64 KB, I think. So whatever number of values would fit into that block, we group them, we LZ4 compress, and then store them. In this case, in this example, I think there are 6 values per block. So the point is, if we want to retrieve a row, we get the block, we uncompress it, we get the delta encoding, and from that we can get the real value. So query execution pipeline. So Druid query execution pipeline follows these steps. So first there's a scan, and after scan, we can do a filter. After filter, there might be a project where we want to join two columns, do some kind of concatenation on those. And after project, we do aggregate, and that's where most of the Druid's magic comes. We do group bys, those kind of aggregate operators. There can be optional. By the way, all of these steps are optional. You might not be doing a filter. You may not do any project, so you might just do a scan. But that's how it will go. So after aggregate, you can do a filter again. So that's like SQL halving. And after that, you might do a project again, and a sort. Sort is like order by. You can do limit, those things. Late materialization. So Druid, like a lot of column stores, Druid supports late materialization. The way it does that is that scan is a new operator. So the time when the first stage is filter, when we actually look at the aggregate like data, and then in the aggregate step, that's when we look at different cells and combine that data. So operating on compressed data. So recall our dictionary encoding. So when I say operating on compressed data, that means that we can operate on the dictionary codes without looking at the string values as such. So aggregation operators, group by, those can read the dictionary codes directly and use them as keys in hash tables. And only when we need to merge two different segments, that's when we actually need to look at the key, the string values in the key. So we can see the same thing with an example query. So it's a group by query. So let's say you have a bunch of rows, and the aggregate operator, the group by aggregate operator, can operate directly on the dictionary IDs or the dictionary codes, and it might create these segments. They might be 100K rows each or something like that. And then when we are merging these inter-segment results, only that's when we would need to look at the actual values in that dictionary. So that's how we at query time we can operate on the compressed data. That's one way. And I think I have more slides. Okay. So another way we can, like another example of how we can operate on compressed data is Droid uses these order-preserving dictionaries. So the code for a dictionary value would be it would be greater than the value which are smaller and smaller than the values which are greater. So, for example, here's an example of a dictionary. So, and when you are doing filtering based on some kind of selection criteria, you can just find the lower bound and the upper bound, and then you can just compare the IDs of those dictionaries. So comparing numbers is always much, much faster than comparing strings. So that's how that helps us in query speeds as well. Okay, so vectorization. So we are adding the support for a vectorized query engine. So what that means is it works on the principle that we can do operations on a batch of row instead of a single row. So we can do iterations on a bunch of, like on a batch of row. We can do aggregations on a batch of rows. So for example, on the left side, the interface, it shows the non-vectorized, and on the right side, that's the vectorized. So the aggregate function can take an array of inputs, and the get remains the same. So why do we do that? We do that to when we operate on batches of columns, there are fewer method calls. So it leads to better cache locality, so better memory bandwidth. And it opens up the possibility of using like SIMD instructions. So at least possibility is there. So it can be utilized. These are some benchmarks which we did on a query which was vectorized and non-vectorized. So these, well, you can go to this link, and there are all the details about what are each one of these queries are. Most of these queries are time series or group by. What we observed is the performance. So this chart shows the query execution time. It was equal. I think the first few queries were time series queries, unfiltered. And some of them are filtered, or some of them have different aggregations going on. But we observed that the time was equal or slightly greater in case of vectorized. And this chart is about query execution rates. In this one, so these three queries stand out, I think number 12 and 13. So I think they were group by queries, so they crossed 100 million rows per second mark. So vectorization is going to help with the query speeds even more. Okay, rollup. Rollup is this summarization which can happen at ingest time. So you can decide if you want to aggregate some of the data, and it would help with saving some space and give better compression and ultimately faster queries. It can be a tricky concept to understand, so let's see that with an example here. So this was the same Wikipedia data set. And if, let's say, we said we roll up is true and we are rolling up, let's say, by an hour, we specify the time by which we want to roll up and we specify what are the dimensions. So in this case, let's say page and city are dimensions. So when roll up happens, it doesn't change the dimension value. It keeps it as it is. But the metrics, in this case, added and deleted columns. So we have a count, some added and some deleted. We can use some pre-baked functions when we are doing roll-up. So in this case, we have some added count and some deleted. So the three rows for Justin Bieber got rolled up into a single row. So this would save space on the disk for us and other compression benefit. So if you are working with some kind of a space constraint and you have high cardinality columns in your data set like user IDs, URLs, think about rolling it up to get better price per performance ratio. We have seen ratios from like 30 to 1 if you use rollup versus you don't. Well, if you need to filter on any column or you need the raw events, then you can turn it off. Approximate algorithms. So approximate algorithms are these lossy data structures which can represent a larger set into a sketch, and they also help in trading accuracy for performance. Again, you can use them at ingestion time, and it will give you better roll up and better memory performance. So again, same example. So let's say here the user ID. You want to, let's say, find how many users visited my website in the last week. You don't really care about each individual user. You just want the number. So you can use HyperLogLog or ThetaSketch. Those are the libraries which are integrated with Druid. And at ingestion time, it will create this sketch object. So in this column, and so it helps with the roll-up ratios. It helps with compression later on and query speed. So sketches are great if you can afford a little approximation in your results. And at query time, they can reduce memory footprint. For example, for a count distinct query, let's say you have 100 million values and each of 10 bytes each. With the exact solution, you would need to store all those values in a set. But with the approximate solution, you can create a HyperLogLog sketch of those. And memory-wise, so with the exact solution, you will store it in 1 GB memory, whereas with a sketch, it's just a few kilobytes. Okay, so what's coming soon? What's coming soon in Druid? So these are all the things which are coming up in the next release, which is the 0.16 release. I'm not sure if the RC1 is already out or not, but if not, it should be out very soon. We already talked about query vectorization, so that's coming out in 0.16. Array-based group by. So we were using hash-based group by in the previous Druid releases, but we have the array-based group by coming out soon. Native parallel batch indexing. So we had the phase one of native parallel batch indexing, which did not support perfect rollup, but that's also coming out in 0.16. And big indexer process. Those of you who have worked with Druid, you are familiar with the middle manager and peon, those processes. So in the 0.16, I think it's experimental. Oh, by the way, query vectorization is also experimental in 0.16. So the big indexer process, it combines the middle manager and peons into a single process, so it would be easier to operate on. And so it works in a single JVM process instead of multiple processes. And a lot of SQL improvements. There are always SQL improvements which we are doing in Druid. Some new time functions are coming up, as well as there are some cool new IPv4 functions which you can use to convert between the decimal format to string format, and convert it back. So those are all the things which are coming up. All right, so Druid is a open source project. I'm Druid, you can be too. You can download Druid from the Apache website. Well, right now if you go to the druid.io, it will just redirect to apache.org. And I work for Imply. This is the Imply distribution. You can get a bundled version. It has a nice quick start guide. You can use that, try it out. Finally, you can contribute. We are hosted on GitHub. You can go to that link. And stay in touch. You can go to the community. There are user mailing lists. There is a dev mailing list for dev-related questions. There's a user mailing list for user questions. And there's a brand new ASF Slack channel that gets a lot of traffic these days. If you guys are not using it, that's a great place to go there. A lot of Druid committers are hanging there. And that's my last slide. Thank you very much. Questions? Yes.
You mentioned some front-end tools that can connect to Druid. Is there a protocol that they can use to access Druid, or is it open?
So the front-end tools which people are using generally, the Superset is one of the open source ones, and in terms of protocol, you mean like a lot of those are REST based, I think.
Yes. How does it talk to Druid?
Oh, I think REST APIs is the way to talk to Druid. Yeah. Can you update? So Druid is primarily like a read only, and we don't generally support update, but if you want to update the records, you can do that. So the way to do that in Druid would be, so let's say you want to update some time period, you can re-index that data, and what Druid will do is it will overwrite. So those segments which I was talking about, they are versioned. So when there's a new entry for the same time happens, then there will be a new version. And later on, the older one can be dropped. So that's how you can update records in Druid. Yes? Okay. So the question is, how does global time indexing is done, and what if there is no time column in the data set? So the global time index, that's the partitioning by time. That's what I was talking about there. And if you don't have a time column, well, Druid is primarily a time, like, time has a special meaning in Druid, and you have to make a column which is a timestamp column in Druid, so you won't get all the benefits and efficiencies if you don't have a time column. But you can, if you really don't have a time column and you want to use Druid, maybe you can use a dummy time column, I guess. That's the way. All with the same value, it's not going to be efficient. So I would say that's just not a, use some other database then. Yeah. Yes.
To take that time
Yeah. So yeah. So the time column. When you do the ingestion of your data, there is a segment granularity which you can set up in the ingestion spec, and that's where you can specify whether you want to keep your segments hourly, or daily, or weekly, and based on that granularity, those segments will be created and stored. So that later on, if you want to, let's say you want to do queries like, give me all the values in the past 3 weeks or a month. So Druid knows that it needs to go grab those segments, and it can quickly return the result. Oh, so when roll-up happens, you specify you want to roll up hourly, or you want to roll up on like minutely. Those kind of parameters, and I think it will store the minimum time which it sees in that hour. Or yeah. Okay. Thank you.